fresh off one last night.
Yes.
That did happen.
It did.
A podcast. I was like, what were you guys doing together last time?
We were touching each other's butts. One at a time. Like, I would turn around and then he would touch it.
I thought it was butt to butt.
And then he would turn around and then I would just poke it.
If you haven't tried that to warm up for anything, it works.
Taking turns.
It works really well.
Butt to butt. That's what I was picturing. But no, you guys are taking turns. The last time we were together, we were talking about, I think we started off the last episode with smartphone etiquette, and I wanted to bring up a couple other ones. Like this, we were at work the other day, and the people. Okay, so if you're at an airport or something, you're in a subway, or you're not the restaurant, but or it can be the restaurant too, but you know, just in a public place, and you see the businessman on talking to himself, but he's really not talking to himself. He's got the earbud in or whatever.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
That makes sense to me. I'm like, okay, yeah, I'm out in public and people are taking care of business. When you're at work and these motherfuckers are a little too strong because these are colleagues of mine, but people who are talking non-work related shit on the phone, and I'm not specifically picking one person. Three or four people, probably something like that. So can't really narrow it down to one person. But when they're just talking and then you look over to answer them or to see what they want, and then you realize they're having a conversation while they're working, I'm like, what the fuck? Like,
it's so confusing. I don't like it either. Because then you're like, are they crazy?
Yeah, that's the first thought.
Have they gone insane?
And then they're like, no, they're not crazy. I know this person. Then you go to answer them. And then you realize, and then they ignore you because they're on their... Mm-hmm. I don't know, man. The having to be on the phone nonstop, having a conversation, no matter what you're doing, is like a compulsion that I mean, I don't know. Like,
I try my best to not be on the phone. I, in fact, if possible, don't even want to talk to text
people. I prefer texting. Yeah.
Do you guys ever get mad when somebody calls you? Why didn't you just text
me
that?
What the fuck, man? This was an emergency? Somebody dead? What's that, Jason?
This could have been a text.
Yeah. Or
this could have been an email.
Now, somebody leaves you a message. That's like an obligation. You have to like click and listen to this, you know, their whatever.
You don't let the like... Oh, you have an iPhone, right?
Yeah.
Siri does like the poor translation of the... Those are great. I just read those sometimes and that tells me whether or not to listen to the...
Oh, okay.
I've saved ones for a while that are so bad and so funny. It's like ad libs when you're a kid.
And they're Siri. Yeah, it leaves the blanks when it doesn't know what the person is
right,
saying.
Yeah. Ooh, I get to fill these in myself.
Yeah.
We're calling you.
It's
about
like, hey, this is grape bacon from the car astronaut. Would you blank, please blank?
Oh, I've been expecting this phone call. Yeah. So there's preferences, right? Like we've all kind of just fallen into that whole thing about the texting is how I prefer to get a message.
It's not even the phone though. Like the concept of talking to somebody.
Yeah.
While working, it's just gross. Just let me do my thing, man.
Yeah, I just don't get it when you're at work or... and I do have a pet peeve of people hijacking, especially at work, the break room where they're playing whatever fucking music or TV, YouTube show. Mm-hmm. You go in there to sit down and have a meal and then somebody else is fucking, I guess, taking control of the entire fucking break room. So you have to listen to whatever shitty YouTube show they're watching or whatever. And like if it was me in that situation, I'm like, I got the fucking break room to myself. I'll be whatever the fuck I want. And as soon as somebody walks in, I'm like, oh God, just embarrassment sticks in. Yeah.
Put your pants back on.
Yeah. So
Matt's watching Real Housewives again.
There's that. There's
you know what? I've encountered this many times. I don't know how to best tell this without giving up too much information about where and we work and stuff. But people on the phone with someone else on speaker in public. There's something to be complained about. Like, why are you having your conversation in public? But I guarantee half the time that other person has no fucking clue they're talking to the whole world.
Yeah.
And I've heard people at work saying things out loud that the other person definitely did not want said out loud.
Yeah.
In like highly trafficked public areas.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
So okay. Yeah. When you're putting someone on speaker,
yeah.
Do you guys say like, oh, you answer, but hey, you're on speaker. Like, is that like a courtesy thing? Would you agree?
Yeah. If I wasn't here at home by myself, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, if someone else is around.
I don't do it if I'm just at my house, yeah. But I don't think I don't usually put people on speaker.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, man, earbuds are the greatest.
Yeah, the one thing I always do, if I'm in the car and someone calls me, and I'm not the only one in the car, I always kind of make sure they know that. Yeah. I'm like, etiquette. Hey, I'm in the car with someone. Yeah,
they're listening.
But yeah, that's total etiquette. It's like, hey, the nature of the phone call, regardless, like whatever it is, I still give them the courtesy of like, hey, you're on speakerphone, and just move on from there.
My favorite recent one is people are in their cars and talking on the phone in their car, and the volume's up so loud that I'm in my other car over, and I can hear the conversation.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, the proctologist called back. And,
he got three fingers in this time.
Whoa.
Like, my God, like, how
long? We're hoping, we're hoping by four fingers by December.
We need more creative ways to tell people that, like, when you're in the car, right, and someone calls, you know, like your friend's sitting in the passenger seat when you answer, be like, hey, how's it going? Hey, don't talk about your dick this time.
Oh, yeah.
Like, what? Excuse me?
Right.
Yeah, just don't do it. I usually don't. Hey, man, we don't need to get into that right now.
The other one, too, is like people have their phone paired and it, like, reads the text messages back. You know, ever had that in your car? I always think like horrible timing if you got it reading back like inappropriate text messages.
Yeah, yeah.
I fell on a bottle again.
I fell.
Please take me to the emergency room.
It repeats it back in quote. Yeah. I fell in quotes. Ian actually got me with this one last night because I had to go on I had to leave the main our main work area to go do some deliveries through the building, and I left my phone, which I never do, but like I fucking just, it's funny how attached we are because I was inconsolable. It felt like a phantom limb.
Yep.
Like I'm missing something. Like the entire time, even though
my precious.
Yes, exactly. That's how it feels. So I come back down and I explain it to Ian. We were working together last night, and I was like, oh man, I was inconsolable for the entire hour. I was gone. He's like, man, yeah, there's probably like five or six dick pics on there now. And it's like, what the hell?
That's this customary amount.
Right, which is what I would joke about with people leaving their phone, like charging in the change area in our little locker area. It's like, oh, well, you know, it's your fault for leaving your phone out. There's like 10 dick pics on there now. Not mine, though. They're black ones. They're blurred out Asian ones. They're angry red Irish
animated
ones. Yeah, drawn ones. On that note, this is Mind Grenade, episode 276. We are your hosts. I'm Hector.
I'm Jason.
Ian.
Also, Matt.
Mind Grenade is a pop culture-based show that dives into TV, movies, music, and a whole lot more. Comics as well.
Oh.
Just in case Ian didn't
and
know.
And comics, yeah.
And comics.
Also, they're called movies. Graphic novels.
Nerd alert.
Okay. Novella. Graphic novellas.
Graphic novellas. Back to the phones. I wanted to mention another thing that I do that I don't expect other people to do, and is I watch just about anything we talk about here, movies or TV shows. Like I'm watching What We Do in the Shadows season 3, mm-hmm. which is excellent.
Yeah.
I'm watching Demon Slayer and what's the third TV show? Oh, and then What If. I've watched all those fucking shows on my phone. Like I have a TV out here. I've got a nicer TV in my room. Like, I just can't bring myself. I'm so fucking attached to every, like, I run my entire life off my phone. I was like, I'm already on my phone. I got my earbuds in.
What if you got, like, a sweet chain, you know, that hooks your hands, and then you'd always have it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I don't think anyone's ever done that before.
Yeah.
I don't think so.
That's too cool to be true. No,
it's the ultimate comfort, you know. You just got it in your hands.
I got my little prop up thing over here. Set my phone up, and I set it on my little drafting table, and I set my phone up just like that, just a little propped up. I guess people used to have the little disc on the back of their phones that'll prop. But so I sit there, and I, The earbuds help because, like, there's no way the I can hear everything perfectly if I've got the earbuds in on Bluetooth. You can't hear your favorite guy above you and going, ha, 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 ha. Yeah, the guy upstairs. But yeah, I mean, sometimes I'm like, oh no, I need to watch this movie on my nice TV in my room because it's, it's like, no, I'll just hang out here and watch it. I don't know. I'm sure you guys don't. I'm sure Jason with his 8K TV probably just, you know, sits in his throne.
Okay. I do a little bit of both.
Would, if you watched Tenet on there and Christopher Nolan knew, would he
stop? Oh, yeah. He'd flip out. Yeah. Yeah.
That's his next tweet.
Yeah.
He did what?
Yeah. He hates me more now than he hates Warner Brothers.
Wait, do you use headphones when you do that?
What's that?
When you watch movies on your phone?
No, I wear my earbuds. Okay. And yeah.
The only worst way to do it would be through, like, the tin can phone speakers. Oh. Like, yeah. Imagine Tenet's like...
Yeah. Right. You guys, I'm sure... Jason, you said a little bit of both.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You guys probably just watch it like normal people watch TV.
Like, I watch movies on my TV.
Yeah.
And then...
I'm sure YouTube
I watch
is
like
probably,
YouTube and stuff on my phone all
right,
the time.
Yeah.
Do YouTube on my phone. I don't have any of the apps on my phone mm-hmm. for like
Netflix, HBO and, right. And by the way, I got to give credit to Jason and Matt. Like as soon as we were done recording last time, I went immediately and signed up for HBO Max again for Mayor of East
yes.
Town.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
I haven't started watching it yet because I'm still once What If wraps up, then I'll start mm-hmm. watching Mayor of East Town. And I'll probably end up watching that on my phone. But
that well, I mean that's something you can watch.
Yeah, sure. Not Guardians of the Galaxy
right,
or some
exactly.
shit. But speaking of comic book movies, I did just watch Venom in the movie theater. They weren't playing it on whatever streaming service
right,
would
yeah.
have that movie. Sony movie. Watching on the IMAX. It was a lot of fun. I gave it a C+, which is pretty good. I think that's what I was hoping for, like for a movie like that, complete B movie schlock. Like they go for that. Like
okay,
the silliness of the first movie, it's there.
They lean into it. Okay.
The thing that I liked about it, I was telling Ian about this, is that there's no superfluous shit. It's just like streamlined, like story and moves. It's like an 80-90 minute movie.
Oh, that's perfect. See, I love
okay.
that.
They're not fucking around trying to like I don't know,
stretch it out into something.
Yeah, there wasn't a lot of like, let me give you like hammer down some moral message about whatever. It's a fucking.
There's no Alfred teaching Wonder Woman how to make tea appropriately.
Yeah, nothing like that. Yeah, yeah. So
or the worst offense is where it's like a divergence into maybe what would be a storyline or some kind of development
yeah.
and then is dead and
yeah
there's no a thing
which like which
a,
happens because okay. it's stuff like that where, oh, we got to trim back this movie so we're going to cut off yeah. the resolution to that B story or whatever. Yeah, there's none of that. Woody Harrelson's great. You know what I liked a lot though is Carnage, which I was more of a fan of Venom growing up. I remember when Carnage hit the
You're
scene.
You're not a fan of like psychopathic serial killers?
Yeah, I know, crazy. Right. Yeah. But the cool thing is that you got the Carnage. You got what you... If you were a huge fan of Carnage, you got a great portrayal. And Woody Harrelson never disappoints. Like, he's always really good. But, like, yeah, they lifted the character from the comics into a big-budget movie, and it worked. And then Tom Hardy, I mean, good for him. I'm glad mm-hmm. the movie was successful. Like, it made plenty of money over the weekend.
I think it was the biggest grossing one of the year as far as opening weekend. That's what they say.
I think so. It got a lot of,
a lot of Tom Hardys.
Yeah.
Yeah. I call him Tom Makes Me Hardy.
Mm-hmm. He's great. He got a writing credit on this movie. I don't know if he's a producer or something. He's put a lot into it. Kind of like Ryan Reynolds with Deadpool, where it wasn't just a role. He like had a say in how the movie's going to roll out and had stakes in it like mm-hmm. as a producer. So and then Andy Serkis directed this movie, his Venom 2, which is awesome because Andy Serkis, who was Gollum in the Lord of the Rings, and as he was... the character's name in the Planet of the Apes movies? Caesar, I think it was. Yeah, those movies are fucking excellent. I've said
he
that.
He was like a South Africa McCriminal Man in the Marvel Universe.
Yeah, yeah. He was Ulysses Claw.
Ulysses Claw.
Which is cool because, okay, so he's got the Planet of the Apes, the Lord of the Rings. He's been in the Marvel movies.
He's like, I only do franchises.
Yeah, I guess so. It's working out great for him. And he seems like a genuinely cool dude, like a decent guy. So I'm glad for him.
I heard he changed his name to Smeagol in real life.
I love those movies. Really enjoyed it, and I'm glad it all worked out.
Can you take kids to see it?
No. It's pushing the PG-13. Like, there's a lot of people begging for their lives in this movie. Like, the deaths are, like, right, like, they cut it right off when there's no blood or anything. You don't see any, but there are plenty of deaths, and the added element of the person begging for their life right before they die is, like, if it happens once, it's one thing, but it happened multiple times, and I'm like, oh, God, that makes me kind of uneasy. But
did they drop their one allotted F-bomb?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. I think Venom drops an F-bomb in it. And remember the fucking Spider-Man 3 movie with Topher Grace playing Venom? Like, that was just so...
We try not to.
Yeah, you suppressed that? I loved the design.
Everything about that movie was... bad.
Yeah.
Tobey Maguire, like, snapping down the street.
I've only seen scenes from that movie. I've never watched the movie.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
It's a classic.
it's not, though.
The design of the Venom in these last two movies are, like, just straight out of the comic, except for he doesn't have the spider symbol on his chest, because Spider-Man's not part of that universe yet, even though Venom is, like, in the comics... spawned from, because the origin story of Venom in the comics is that all the heroes were on this alien planet that they were all taken there, like the Marvel heroes, the Avengers, the X-Men, Spider-Man, all of them were, like, whisked away to this, like, battle planet or whatever to fight each other or fight other villains, something crazy like that, back in the 80s. And then while they were there, I think it was, like, Thor and Spider-Man are, like, going through these rooms in this base on this alien planet, and there's this machine that makes costumes, and...
it's all matching jumpsuits because it's the 80s.
Yeah, exactly, yeah, with Adidas signs and stuff on them. So this machine ends up, like, puking out this, like, black substance and stuff, and then Spider-Man... like attaches to, like, it becomes, like, it turns into, like, a black suit for Spider-Man. Him not realizing it's alive. The battle finishes up on this planet or whatever, heroes win the day and they go back home. And then for months after that, Peter Parker's got the black symbiote suit, not knowing. But then it, like, makes him more aggressive. Kind
of
like that. But
it's exactly the plot of the third movie.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Sorry,
without the intergalactic vending machine.
I should have just said that, yeah. But none of that's in the Venom movies. None of the Venom symbiote just crash lands on Earth in the beginning of that first movie. And then Eddie Brock is the first, maybe not the first person who has it in that first movie. But there's no Peter Parker in the Venom origin in the movies. Have you guys had anything spoiled with this movie other than
I listened to Let's Talk About Stuff and they disliked, maybe hated it.
Oh, really? Okay. Yeah. Did they talk about the end credits sequence?
No.
No, okay. Do you guys know anything about it?
I haven't even seen the first Venom yet.
Okay, yeah.
The audience score in it is great, like 85.
Yeah, and my feelings on the first one, I'm sure I recorded an episode of the podcast on there. It was that by no means would I be like, this is a good movie. Like, it's fun. Mm-hmm. And
which is basically what the first one was, I think we can...
Well, that's what I'm saying about the first one. The first one is like, it's fun and stuff. And, like, I was like, oh, man, like, it has its moments. And I was like, if it gets a sequel, I'm sure they'll improve on what it didn't do well. And they did. They, like I said, it's a B movie. Like, even though it has a huge budget, like, they know what it is. So they just kind of lean into it. It's kind of like the Godzilla versus Kong, where from the fucking credits at the very beginning, it's a glorified wrestling match. They're not trying to fucking class it up at all. They're going for it, which I appreciate. Don't try to sell me some kind of Shakespearean thing when
sipping tea.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. So, so I'm glad. So it looks like I'm sure they're going to announce a third Venom movie. I really don't want to ruin the end credit sequence here since you guys don't know anything about it, but it opens up we've kind of gotten used to the end credit scenes with the last five or six movies mm-hmm. not being that big a deal. This one's a fucking big deal.
Okay.
A lot of crazy stuff's going to come out of this.
I saw it trending, so yeah, it must be.
Yeah.
Deadpool had the best end of the credit scene.
When he goes back in time?
With the animated Spider-Man. Isn't that from Deadpool?
No, that's from... Into the Spider-Verse.
Oh, yeah.
Where it's they keep pointing at each other, Yeah, I love that shit. All right, let's see. And then, I wanted to follow up with you, Matt. Deathloop. Can you tell us more about Deathloop, your adventures? Are you still playing?
It's awesome. I finished it.
Oh, yeah?
Already?
Yeah.
Okay. How many hours did you put in?
20. It's not a long, long game. It's a more classic, single player. I mean, you can make it long, especially if you're really dumb and you can't, figure out the puzzles.
So that's an 100-hour game for me.
Yeah.
So, ladies and gentlemen, if you spend more than 20 hours on this game, just know that Matt thinks you're dumb.
No, it's excellent. I think everyone should play it. It does this really cool thing with the narrative, too, where there's no cutscenes. It depends what you call a cutscene, but there's basically no cutscenes, and you could finish the game, and if you didn't take the time to really investigate, not really know what was going on, the story is told through the world entirely,
okay.
in a really well done way.
Okay, so the graphics are, I'm sure
it's kind of if you ever played the Dishonored games, it's kind of quasi cartoony but realistic too. For some reason. I think it's just poorly optimized. It fucking hardlines a PC. And it's not a graphically stellar game. I don't know. The VRAM usage is maxing out my top line graphics card.
That seems to be such a big thing nowadays is they just get the game out there and they're okay, we'll worry about optimizing it later.
Well, they optimize it for the consoles for sure.
Yeah.
But for PC, since everyone has a different machine, I don't know. They just never do a good job optimizing it for PC. But anyway, yeah, it's a killer game. The premise is, I've played plenty of time loop games, but it's just better. It's someone described it in a video. It's the Day After Tomorrow.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, no, I can see that after your description the last time we were.
I just lost my train of thought. Oh, the New World. It's talking about graphics.
Oh, yeah.
You guys heard about it bricking, people's... crazy expensive.
I heard it
GPUs.
Was a specific manufacturer and there was known defects to the card anyway.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Still, that would be horrible.
I know.
The game is fried.
Especially a 3090, which is a card you literally cannot buy right now.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it's the PlayStation. They're just completely sold out everywhere.
And they're like $1,000 a piece, right?
Yeah.
I was just going to ask how much they are.
Extremely. Yeah.
Spend $1,000 to break your PC. holy shit.
You were just talking about cutscenes and stuff and what constitutes a cutscene or not. I haven't played this game, but we brought it up the last time we were talking about video games. So it's that Ghost of Tsushima.
Yeah.
I haven't played it, but it looks like the entire game looks like cutscene.
I'm sure
quality.
There's a ton. And some games, though, you expect that style of narration where it's a very there's long cutscenes, they're really well done and stuff.
Yeah.
The reason it works so well in this game is because you're solving a mystery. You're solving the mystery. Every cutscene they put in makes you no longer solving the mystery because cutscenes feed you information.
Okay, yeah, right.
So the way that the game uses its own world to tell the story is that's not easy to do, and it's very well done.
Nice.
What do you guys think about unskippable cutscenes? Is it...
I don't care because I would never skip. If I'm skipping a cutscene, I'm probably just skipping the game.
Exactly. Yeah.
Okay. Did anyone play Metal Gear Solid 4, Guns of the Patriots?
Any of the Metal Gear
Dude, that game has cutscenes in it that are like, you need to make sure that you're not done playing before you start the cutscene. Because that fucker's going to go on for like 35 minutes.
If that's what I hate. It's like, you got to leave. You got to go do something. And it's like, hold on. Yeah.
That's one of my favorite games of all time. But goddamn, so many times I was like, I'm just going to play, like, I just got to finish this one area. And then it fucking drops you into, like, no joke, like a 20 to 30 minute cutscene.
Jeez.
The worst thing I remembered was Skyrim's, that opening one. You just wanted to start a new game, and then, you know, you're like halfway through that.
He's awake, I see.
Right, yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's such a meme now. If you, like, watch, like, meme compilations, like, half the videos are using that intro to Skyrim.
Well, there's two different types of cutscenes. There's ones that are actually feeding you information for your gameplay. And then there's the other one that's just basically just fluffy storytelling that you don't really need to keep going through the game. Yeah. And that would be the worst if it's just a bunch of fluffy, here's look at our story and our environment and for 20 minutes. Mm. And so you can just keep throwing your sword around.
I don't know why, but you're describing it as fluffy made me think of Kingdom Hearts. Do you guys remember those games?
I do.
Yeah. Disney. I never played them, but I wanted to, but I never did. And then a friend of mine did. So
I don't know if there's cutscenes that are fluffy in it, but for whatever reason, the word fluffy just put that game into my head. Jason, you played that those games at all? The Kingdom Hearts, you know what I'm talking about?
I did for, I don't remember why, but for a few minutes with someone, but I haven't played much of it at all.
Apparently they were very good.
They are, yeah. They're supposed to be really good.
Because they integrated some, like, one of the Final Fantasy characters, or a couple.
Wait, it's
of
basically
them
like Final Fantasy meets Disney. Yeah,
right, right. Speaking of Disney, somebody's pretty close to a trip to Disneyland. Mm-hmm. Jason, tell us about what do you look most, you yourself, not like, let's imagine your kids aren't going, but what are you looking forward
He's
to?
He's in a bathtub alone with Mickey Mouse.
Wow.
Both their pants are off.
Not again. Yeah. Well, the one you don't want to be alone in a bathtub with Donald Duck. That guy gets very aggressive. Never seen a cloaca like that before. Anyway, so I'm looking forward to, I'm hoping that the Star Wars part of, because last time I was there, of Disney Studios and the dark ride, was it Rise of Resistance, I think is what it's called?
Okay.
Because now there's
this Millennial Park, right?
Dude, I was just going to make that joke. I'm like, what is that park called again?
Ian's not quick enough being Ian, so Matt's Ian Foran. for two reasons. It's supposed to be really cool. And I hope there's like a virtual queue that I think you have to get in just to get on the ride. So hopefully we can do that. That's supposed to change soon. But anyway, like, because the ride's such a popular thing, you have to, like, there's certain times you have to get on your phone and then get in virtual line, or the spots will be taken up and you don't get on.
Hmm.
But these rides, even there's a new Ratatouilleville ride as well in Epcot.
What is it?
Ratatouilleville. Oh, yeah.
Isn't there a whole other syllable in there?
Ratatouilleville. Ratatouilleville. Okay. Anyway, they're both trackless dark rides. So I've never been on a trackless dark ride before, from what I understand, which means, like, the most dark rides you're used to, either you're in a boat floating through water that has a current that takes you through the dark ride, or you're on a track.
Yeah.
You know, that takes you. These are, like, new tech where just, like, location technology, whether they do it through lasers or however they do it, the ride knows where it's going. So you are not on a track. You're just in a vehicle. Yeah, you're just in a vehicle that is traversing the environment. Yeah. So you're more immersed that way.
Yeah.
So I'm looking forward to seeing what this new trackless dark ride tech is like and stuff like that.
How's Ratatouille a dark ride?
I'm pretty sure it is.
No, I know. Explain to me how the horror element fits into it.
Oh, well, God, this creme brulee.
Dark rides aren't necessarily horror.
I know.
I mean, they're just...
Yeah. So you're really banking on them having taken your picture off that wall at the Star Wars park, aren't you?
So they'll let me in.
Yeah, because I picture them dragging Jason out. Darth Vader wouldn't say that. Why would... come on.
But yeah, then there's the Millennium Falcon ride as well. So it'll be cool. There's lots of stuff that was... There's the Toy Story part of the park that was under construction. There was a Mickey Mouse minecart thing that was under construction at Disney Studios as well. But I don't know how much of their projects are on hold at this point. Because I think some stuff got kind of delayed because of the pandemic and stuff, but they just keep putting stuff out. There's a Star Wars like 2-day like immersive thing that's going to open up in a year or two, which is you go stay 2 days in this thing where they make it's a simulation where they make you think you're on a Star Cruiser. And it's a 2 days, and I think it's like thousands of dollars or something. I'm sure it's expensive. And then they
kit are you gonna sell?
Yeah, exactly. So they put you on this thing, and they make you feel like you're on a ship, and then you have there's like I'm sure a lot of role playing going on, and I think have a role to play on the ship.
Pictured Jason. I can't stop masturbating. You got to get me off of this thing.
Anyway, but that's coming as well. So I don't know that I've ever seen a fully like multi-day like experience like that with some sort of theme. I don't know if you call it a ride because it's mostly going to be like. I think when the things open up, you're going to be in space. I'm not sure how they're going to pull this off.
Is it like a hotel? You're going to sleep on it?
Yeah, you stay there. I think maybe 2 nights. I think it said 2 days. I don't know if it's 2 nights as well. If it's just like 1 night and 2 whole days. I don't know how they do it, but
that's an interesting concept.
And they're going to make you feel like you're living in it. Like,
so. I mean, you will be if you're there for 2 days.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's are you so going to build your own lightsaber?
They have that actually already at the park thing, but I think that's why you're asking. I don't know. We did get reservations in the cantina, so we're gonna go to the cantina.
That's cool.
So
are you gonna bring your own flute?
That would be awesome.
Yes, it's packed and ready to go.
I love that you knew the song that well. Don't they have like a full size Millennium Falcon just parked there?
And they do too. Yeah. So they get the cantina replica, like you can go in there and have drinks and stuff, and then they have the full size Millennium Falcon thing that you ride. Yeah, it'll be fun.
Yeah, and then before or after your birthday? I know your birthday's coming up.
Yeah, birthday's tomorrow. We stay in a hotel tomorrow night right by the airport because we leave like early in the morning.
Okay.
Friday, and so when we fly in Friday morning, we're gonna head right to Epcot. So we're gonna
be yeah
the day of so. And then that's where the my youngest daughter will be the Frozen ride. That's where she'll lose her shit. I've been on it. It's the ride is super cool.
I was listening to either How Did This Get Made? Yeah, it was How Did This Get Made. You might have heard this. I don't know which episode it was, but Paul Scheer and June Diane Raphael, they're married, but they're also co-hosts with Jason Mantzoukas on How Did This Get Made. And they were talking to Mantzoukas about a trip to Disneyland, and they were like, and they have young kids probably around your age, your two middle kids probably around that age, and they were like, they surprised their kids. They told their kids they were going to go do something just boring, you know, just they came up with some bullshit like plan to go do whatever, and they had the kids in the car, and they start turning in. They take the detour towards Disneyland or Disney, wherever they're at, Florida or California. Their kids just lost their fucking minds. Like, you not expecting to go to Disneyland, and then you're suddenly being taken to it as a 6-year-old. Like, I can't imagine. Like, I was like, oh, man, that's got it. What a nice, you know, idea. As a parent.
Did he give them back to their real parents afterwards?
And just I left them there.
Disney's unique in the theme park is they don't try to like, you know, there's the, what's the one in up in Ohio that has all the roller coasters? Like they don't try to.
Cedar Point.
Yeah, they don't try to thrill you with how fast you can dive and how much you can loop de loop and stuff like that. It's all about like being on the cutting edge of their tech and just like wowing you with the experience. Yeah. And so that's
last time I went to Disney, it was all about advertising.
Yeah.
Every ride was like the Toy Story ride from Joy hand soap. You'd go into the bathroom and like no joke on the mirror is like brought to you by Bounty paper towels.
Yeah. Well,
everything.
I'm sure every ride costs multi millions of dollars and they got to help paying for that
somehow. Can you describe like the frozen ride? Like, how does it blow your mind? Like, I'm just confused.
It's the holograms, right?
There's the holographic face tech that they use now, where there's the animatronic people that are way more impressive than they were than
I
was.
Not
kid.
Like Chuck
but
Cheese.
Then the face, no, not at all. The face tech is they kind of holographic a face onto the animatronic thing, so it is a fully functional blinking. So moldable face that's talking to you.
So you have Princess whatever from Frozen, and it's a lifelike animatronic, but then her face is animated?
Yes, exactly. And then like, you know, like the first thing when you go into the Frozen ride, from what I remember, Olaf starts talking to you. This animatronic Olaf, it'll walk over to you, and then it walks along the thing with you. Like this, the animatronic, all the tech is like next level compared to when I was a kid. So I don't know. By the time my kids have kids, I can't even imagine what Disney's little rides are going to look like. But
man, the two best rides that I remember from Disney were, the first one is not a ride at all. It's at Epcot. It's like the Pepsi Igloo or something like that. And it's just like sodas from around the world. You can just drink as much pop as you want. And they're like some super interesting, weird sodas down there.
There's a food thing going on at Epcot when we get there, so I'll be interested. We looked at some of the very kind of odd and bizarre foods that we'll be able to get when we get there, so that'll look forward to that. Also, there's like this Mission Space thing, and I got on it for the first time last time I was at Disney.
I think this is my second.
Yeah, and I didn't realize we got on it. I didn't realize. Yeah,
yeah.
I did not realize that the simulator was not just like one of those things where it makes you feel like you're flying stuff. It is a legit fucking G-force simulator.
Like the military uses.
So
basically.
When I got on it with my son, we it leans you and you're looking up and you're getting ready to take off and you start taking off and I'm like, I was like, what's going on here?
Like you bear down, man.
Or you really feel it. I was like, holy shit.
That's so funny. That was literally my second thing that I was going to bring up, my favorite ride at Disney. Like you get in line and they're like, no joke, signs everywhere. And they're like handing out pamphlets that are like, please don't die on our ride. Like, they're like, this is serious business. And you're like, what the fuck am I getting myself into?
Yeah.
And then you get there and you just kind of sit in this little pod and there's like, you can sit with like three people and there's like a whole like fake space shuttle instrument panel in there. Uh-huh. You're like, hell yeah. Like, what is this ride? And then they're like, here we go, we're taking off. And all of a sudden, it's like 4 G's on your chest. And you're like,
I look over at Rice and I was like, breathe, dude. He's looking at me like, I'm fine, fatty.
People like vomit like probably hourly on that ride.
Huh. Yeah.
But it's awesome.
I had no idea what was coming.
What's it called? Does it have a...
I think it's called
Mission Space.
Mission Space,
Yeah.
There's like two versions. So there's the one that actually has the legit G-Force simulator. And then there's another lighter version.
There's one for old people.
There's one for old people.
That's the one Jason was on. On a blow a gasket.
That's the one that blew my mind. Yeah, that's the one I struggled with. Was the next? They're like, that wasn't the G-Force simulator.
You're like,
Jason.
Wowee, sir! Aren't you like 40?
Now I am. Yeah, that sounds. Is it the entire clan, or you're probably just leaving the youngest?
The youngest one staying home with my mother-in-law.
Oh
yeah.
Man, the kids are the kids are gonna.
All
flip
the kids
out.
Here will be pissed. They'll be like, remember the time you had to stay home?
So yeah,
and you're like, well, there's got to be a least favorite, guys.
All right, so
and now I want to go to Disney.
Yeah, I wanted to we'll wrap up the show with this, the Department of Truth. We'll jump in that real quick. Let me I wanted to ask just Matt some like just comic booky questions, because this book, The Department of Truth, that you recommended, it doesn't have a very superhero drawing, like the style of the art is, which I'm glad, because this painterly kind of style, kind of bit abstract around, like in the edges and stuff, is completely appropriate for the story. Like, I think the art is great. But growing up, if I don't know how far back, like, or how deep you got into comics prior to recently. But were you ever attracted to art in any way, comic books? Like, you're like, I don't know. I've heard you talk about different comics and mention the art before, describing the art. But were you ever drawn like to certain art styles or anything like that, or just doesn't matter?
Let me step in here for Matt. He loves hentai. He got his early start with that.
Okay.
Yeah.
The tentacles, is that? Am I mostly on the right? Yeah, okay, okay, yeah, yeah, yeah.
No, I've just always been... I didn't really read comics until, like, this year.
Okay.
Period.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So none.
I've always, like, seen them and liked...
Yeah, no like, dabbling.
I've always appreciated good illustration.
Yeah.
Or just novel, yeah, art.
Yeah, okay.
I really like good graphic design. That's why I like the Hickman guy's a graphic
designer.
Hickman,
yeah, because he was a graphic designer prior yeah. to becoming...
Like, I think in a separate life, I would be a graphic designer.
Okay, yeah. With graphic design, it's all about, like, simplicity, but also...
Yeah, it's like this blend of simplicity with complexity. But everything has... It has to be in the right spot, and there's only, like, one right spot.
Yes,
and, like,
exactly.
Just everything is so well
right.
thought out.
Thought out, yeah. I like all kinds of art and comics, but I like when it... Like with this, with the Department of Truth. I like that this style, because I can't picture...
It's like this, like, a weird, like, 60s, 70s psychedelia,
yeah.
but without color. It's like this, like, mm-hmm. depressing, washed out, which totally fits, like, the old 60s, 70s government agency vibe yeah. that the thing is based around. It's
yeah.
just really well done.
To describe this comic, it feels like... It feels very episodic in the same way that X-Files, the TV show, is. And it has to do with agents in the government. So right there is another kind of connection to X-Files. It has to do with conspiracy theories. But like it's like conspiracy theories are its plaything, I guess. Because like they focus on a different conspiracy in each issue. But then like they'll throw little Easter eggs about conspiracies. Like the last issue I read... was what was the airport underneath that
Denver airport
Denver airport, which when I saw the character there underneath the Denver airport, I was like, oh shit, that's a thing in real life, that there's like a
every conspiracy that they reference is a real conspiracy.
Whoever
writes this has clearly done a ton of research on not just like real world conspiracies, but the psychology of conspiracies.
Yes.
And they wrap it into the narrative in a really cool way. So, like,
for instance,
this isn't necessarily conspiracy related, and I don't know the name of it, but there's like a sociologic phenomenon where when a certain percentage of people believe something, it suddenly it's easier for everyone else to believe it, and it just flips over. So you can see this when you look at, like, polling on gay marriage.
Yeah.
Once that threshold was crossed, suddenly everyone supported gay marriage, even though, like, 5 years ago, 60% of people didn't support gay marriage.
Right.
So in the comic, the way they make that work is, like, the premise is if enough people believe something, it becomes real.
Yeah.
But there's a lower threshold where if enough people believe something, they can kind of manifest it.
Yeah.
And then if other people see what they have manifested, suddenly it spirals out. That's the way that real psychological phenomenon is played into the narrative of this story. So this agency is trying to stop even small groups from manifesting enough of a reality that suddenly everyone believes it, and then it's real.
So
it's really cool.
The author is James Tynion IV. So I'm at the point. So the other thing too that's and even like this book is a mindfuck on top of a mindfuck. Like you're following the main character, and he's not sure of what's going on. There's the Department of Truth, which is the organization that brought him in. But then the rival organization is Black Hat, I think it is. It's also trying to tell him that he's on the wrong side. And then you're like thinking, is he on the right side?
But there is no side either, because nothing's real.
Yes. Very, very interesting idea for a comic, and well executed.
It almost kind of plays on the concept of the end of Loki. The time variance. Like one agency is deciding what's the right timeline.
It's like
the same concept where one agency is deciding what the right history is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's a super cool comic. Everyone should read it. First episode is free. I keep saying that.
First issue is free. At Image Comics. I'm really blown away. There's a couple issues there where I'm like, fuck. Like, our buddy Mike, I bought him a copy of the first volume, and after the weekend after I gifted it to him, I get on the phone with him, and we're discussing work shit. And then he was like, oh, dude, that was so good. I just love it. It's great. And I gave you props for it. And we have to give Andy, our buddy Andy, props because I think he put it on your radar.
Yeah.
I told Mike, I was like, yeah, man, it's like a complete mindfuck, but in a good way. Like, I fucking feel like I'm getting something out of the story. It's a mindfuck, but it's not like I'm bothered by it. I'm like really engaged in it. I'll have to look up. I like to give credit to the creative teams. James Cenan IV is the writer who I've heard his name. It's a pretty easy name to remember. It sticks out. But the only thing I know him from, I haven't read any of this stuff before, but he's been a Batman writer. But reading this, then it'll lead me to find other stuff that he's written, you know? So that art question I asked you at the beginning of this is, because I am drawn to, I mean, it's a visual medium, comics and stuff, and I'm an artist as well. And so you can have a comic with just art, but you can't have a comic with just writing, because then it's just prose. It's just a book.
Right.
But there is... So I've been reading comics since I was like since I was 16. Like before that, I had, you know, picked up an issue of whatever, Alf or Heathcliff Playboy comics as a kid. Yeah, when I, you know, off the rack there at the what's that? Would you say?
I just got that Playboy. Yeah.
Right after I said Playboy, you're like, yeah.
Yeah. But when I started reading comics at 16, reading proper comics like Spider-Man and X-Men and everything else. At some point when I was in my later teens, then I started realizing to follow writers. I still appreciated art and I do follow some people for art, but mostly like the majority is I'm fine. It's like, I really like this story. I'm going to follow that writer to the next thing he's doing. That would work most of the time. You know, sometimes, you know, not everything somebody writes is great, but for the most part, you know, what's the guy we were just mentioning? The designer guy.
Hickman.
Like, yeah, I'll try, you know, East of West and then Manhattan Projects. And then he wrote some X-Men books. I'm going to read that. And so, yeah, it's like following a director,
mm-hmm.
you know, so.
You know, there's so many volumes of X-Men over the years.
Oh, shit.
I almost wonder in 1,000 years if the X-Men will be like the new Bible. You know how we picked up, like, no, we don't like that story.
That's apocryphal. We'll that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Jam it together. Like, this is the X-Men Bible.
Cyclops.
There's like a committee meeting in the Vatican in the year like 300.
Well, when I started reading X-Men, the comic was only 30 years old, and which is crazy. And there's probably only like, I'd say probably like 30 X-Men between like the different teams. You had X-Men, you had the Uncanny X-Men, you had X-Force, X-Factor, New Mutants. So between those teams and Xavier being the founder, like there's probably like 30 of them. Now there's fucking like 200 fucking X-Men.
Alternate universe.
Yes, all that shit, dude. Like it's completely just out of hand. But yes, I could see that 100 years from now, the Church of X-Men. But we'll wrap it up there. So yes, please, if you're interested in reading, getting into any comics and stuff, Department of Truth it's not silly superhero stuff, which I appreciate. But like, I also like to try, you know, different types of comics and stuff. Your Neil Gaiman stuff, like Sandman or whatnot. But all right. So you guys have anything else before you wrap it up?
I don't think so.
Y'all get there. So let's see. Do a little networking here. So you find a feed of the podcast at mindgrenadestudios.com. Let's see. Not really posting a lot on Twitter or anything like that. Our email is mgtwenty14@gmail.com. That's mg2014@gmail.com. Leave us an email there. guys, and then you guys just recorded an episode of Listen Impossible.
We just recorded Listen Impossible. Okay, yeah, we got a little ahead of it since I'm going to be gone. We recorded an alien, like an alien themed episode. We also have a Halloween episode that's going to come out. It's not really all just about Halloween, but we got some weird and strange stuff for our facts and things in there. We talk about a guy that back in the 40s, or it was either 40s or 50s, that toured around his headless chicken that was alive.
I remember hearing about that.
So we talked about that. His name was Mike.
Like feed it through its head.
He fed it through its neck. He missed the brainstem, so it kept alive, and he used a dropper and kept it alive and used it as like a sideshow thing to make money.
That's so fucked up, but like crazy at the same time.
That's like the most Midwestern thing I've ever
heard. Nice.
So we talk about that. This is like how basically people back then were starving for entertainment. So stuff like that, people would show up to see.
So that's Listen Impossible. You can check out Jason and Matt there. And let's see. Next week, I'm going to do kind of a wrap up for What If. The newest episode drops the last episode drops this morning of the first season. So I'll be back next week to wrap that up there. Let's see. Yeah, that's it. So thanks for listening. Thanks for subscribing. This has been Hector for Ian, Matt, Jason, and Smeagol saying so long, and we'll talk to you soon.
Over there. If you wanna go and take a ride with me, we three willing in the four with the goatee.